Okay, let us continue. We are on Gemini the Twins. One of the last two chapters we'll be dealing with, Gemini and Taurus. We're on page 343. In the consideration of the remaining signs, there will be relatively less to say than before because I have already pointed out many facts and points when dealing with their pairs of opposites. As I have said, one of the best ways of learning about any sign is to contrast it with its opposite. When defining anything, if you can define its opposite, you have a clearer idea of the thing defined. Much, therefore, that can be said about the sign Gemini can be dealt with under Sagittarius. Virgo and Pisces have also been considered in relation to this sign because all these four signs form together the mutable cross. We remember, for instance, what is it, page 119 or so, an example of the contrast. I think it's about there, but we should go into the correct book. That would help. Yes, here we go. We have Pisces, Sagittarius, Virgo, Gemini, and the factors there considered in the undeveloped man or the average man. The experiences undergone on the three arms of the mutable cross have brought him to the stage where the dream of life can be changed into the recognition of the reality, and the great illusion can be seen as undesirable and untrue. Gemini, a sign which so often in the beginning promotes illusion under Mercury or in relation to Mercury, can begin to help us find our way out of it. The sense of duality is at this stage instinctual, but becoming increasingly real and steadily more complex. The man begins to dream of stability, of ordered changes, and of union with that which he senses to be the most real part of himself. Interesting that the word dream is discussed when so often this is the word discussed in relation to Sagittarius, the opposite. The mystical vision emerges into his consciousness and he becomes aware of the higher self through the first faint flickerings of the intuition. And then, of course, later on the reverse wheel, the man upon the reversing wheel in Gemini becomes increasingly aware of the intuition and increasingly under the influence of the brothers who live in the light, as the twins are sometimes called. The light of the personality dims and the light of the soul waxes. The fluidity of Pisces and the undeveloped Gemini gives place to the responsiveness of the personality to soul impression and consequent stabilizing of the life on the physical plane. The idea of Gemini as the pillars suggesting stability is strongly present. And so it is. You know, actually it would be possible to go through the compilations we have made. Nicholas and I, when we were teaching this course over various number of years, on each one of the signs. We have them on each one of the planets, of course, and it's good to study topically in that way. And maybe there will be the opportunity to do that. Also with the signs themselves. It's a vast subject, and I suppose it takes many, many lives to qualify to enter the ranks of the Department of Astrology within hierarchy. Some of the most selfless workers, we are told by the Tibetan, are working there. So much has been dealt with in the other mutable signs. A certain amount of repetition is necessary and often helpful. Indeed, how long does it take to make an impression? Sometimes when calling out to a person in the ethers and seeking to get their attention, or seeking to come on rapport with them or to make an impression, three calls are necessary. The name has to be called three times. Three is the charm. It serves to clarify and reinforce when one is teaching. But I would like now to be more general. And in dealing with these three signs, which indicate the subjective realities which incite the form taking in Cancer, to consider predisposing causes more than detailed and more easily ascertained facts. And of course, we would have to include the sign Aries as well, right? Would have to be included, right? The sign Aries would have to be included. The subjective incentive towards incarnation, mental, desirous, and etheric, are given in these three signs. So we'll see the degree of detail into which the Tibetan may enter. We're dealing with that which underlies form taking. In this world cycle, Gemini, Taurus, and Aries are the three subjective energies. And we talk about a world cycle. Well, it can be a vast period of time. Can a world cycle be the duration of a solar system? There are these generic terms which are used in different contexts and seem to mean different things. There was a very big hint about world cycle just recently. Was it in the Cancer of the Leo chapter? I can't go back, but it seemed to hint that the solar system was the duration of a world cycle, at least in the context there used. So, Gemini, Taurus, and Aries are the three subjective energies, or the three conditioning signs which lie behind manifestation. They prepare. They are involved with the act of appropriation, because it is necessary to appropriate the mental vehicle, reappropriate, we might say, the mental vehicle, the emotional vehicle, and then following conception to begin building according to the etheric vehicle. As a matter of fact, the etheric vehicle may probably was there before the building of the physical form. It is not coming from the physical form. So that has yet to be established, the time of the appropriation of the etheric vehicle, or the mold upon which the physical vehicle is built. Gemini is one of those signs, along with Aquarius, which has so much to do with the etheric vehicle. Both the planets Mercury and Uranus, Mercury relating to the nadis particularly, and the fine network of subtle energy channels, is strongly connected to the etheric vehicle, and to its electrical nature, Uranus is connected. So these three signs lie behind the form-taking experience in Cancer, and they also lie behind manifestation in Pisces. Would it be considered, he does seem to be speaking of them in a reverse manner, Gemini, Taurus, Aries, and if we continued, we'd be on the clockwise wheel, entering manifestation in Pisces, go forth into matter. Pisces is the sign in which the modern world, and by that I refer to an immense long period of time, the sign with which the modern world is primarily concerned. An immense time, maybe 25,000 years, let us see. For Pisces is the starting point on the clockwise wheel at this time for the greater zodiacal round of approximately 25,000 years, approximately. Some say, it's more like 25,920 if they take the 2160 years of a precessional age literally. But it is the clockwise wheel, and so what is revealed to us here, revealed is that the Platonic ages also proceed or recede in a clockwise manner from Pisces to Aquarius and so forth to Capricorn and so forth. So would that our history could reveal to us that which occurred during these Platonic ages. The history of humanity in those days. If we go back one Platonic age to the time when the age of Aries was ending, we will be back in the time when history, as we know it, to a time when history, as we know it, does not even penetrate. When the Cro-Magnon man and other forms of primitive man supposedly roamed the earth, maybe Neanderthal man a little earlier and so forth. This is our modern conception of history. It really needs, I think, to be rewritten. And the story of the caveman has to be studied in the secret doctrine. So we'd go back in the clockwise wheel, even though we're in this greater age of Pisces. For Pisces is the starting point on the clockwise wheel at this time for the greater zodiacal round of approximately 25,000 years, but we should be reaching the end of that Piscean period, and maybe we will shortly. The date of which beginning is not yet revealed to the modern astrologer or subject to revelation through his science. through the science, well, let's just say the astrological science of the initiates, it can be revealed. And it is hinted that we are not yet into the greater age of Aquarius, beginning, let us say, with the 30th degree of Aquarius. We're still finishing that off. And before long, that age will begin, but we may be well be in the greater overlap period of 5,000 years between these great ages. And so the troublous times we are in, the times of conflicting streams of forces, are a result not only of the conflict between the outgoing lesser Piscean age and the incoming lesser Aquarian age, but of the outgoing greater Piscean age and the incoming greater Aquarian age. Who knows how long we have been in this cross current? One begins to wonder whether when the Buddha and the Christ appeared some 2,500 years ago, it was not a signal that we were in this cross current and that the indications of the coming greater age of Aquarius were not thereby demonstrated through those two appearances. As we study Gemini and Taurus, Aries we have already considered, let us bear in mind their cause-initiating nature. They are causal to physical manifestation, and the fact that they have a more specifically psychic effect and subjective influence than their strictly phenomenal and physical effects would lead one to imagine. Is it possible that in the art of manifestation, these signs are not quite as effective? The subtle bodies of man, the lower mental, the emotional, and the, well, we can call it the etheric body as well, seem to be ruled by these signs. And they are determining, they are impulsive, causative to the manifestation which finally appears. So we'll be looking for their psychic effect and subjective influence. And if people born in or under these signs fail to manifest as perhaps might be expected of them, maybe it's because the psychic effect and the subjective influence are the main areas of attention of the soul when these signs are prominent. You will find, I think, in that it is these hints and suggestions which are of the most importance in launching and utilizing the new esoteric astrology. Sometimes DK tells us when he's giving us a hint, other times we have to determine that we are being given a hint. We're certainly being told something about the effects on the inner man of these three signs. We have to many times drop our conceptions offered us in customary astrology. I think, you know, in the beginning of my astrological interest and investigation of the subject, I sometimes think I studied far too much of the astrologers of the more ordinary type. I begin to wish I had studied esoteric astrology first and picked up the other necessities as I went along. But the correction of thoughts has proceeded, and thus it will for all of us who carefully study the Tibetans' work, but not only in esoteric astrology, but in the larger sense, because his astrology makes sense in terms of a treatise on the seven rays, in terms of the developing esoteric psychology, esoteric healing, and the rays and the initiations. Then the astrology can really be applied. The psychology is so much a study of the mental and emotional aspects of man, especially his kama-manasic nature, and the interaction of the truly subjective nature of the soul with those dimensions. And when we get into esoteric healing, we are particularly interested in the etheric body, in radiatory and magnetic healing via the etheric body, but we must not forget that there is healing as well of an emotional type undertaken by many psychologists and therapists, and also of a mental type, perhaps undertaken by people who have a philosophical inclination, because there are healing thoughts to certain types of individuals, and the presence of these thoughts and the understanding of them, the conviction of their truth, will bring a healing reorientation to at least some types of human beings. You will find, I think, that it is these hints and suggestions which are of most importance in launching and utilizing the new esoteric astrology, and perhaps it has been and is being somewhat launched and utilized at this time. The implications found in the book are far beyond anything that I've seen applied so far. Profound knowledge of the human being is needed to apply the new esoteric astrology, and a real understanding of the human being's place in the scheme of evolution and the methods of proceeding. And then astrology can throw light upon which of these processes have to be emphasized and the various obstacles and assets at the disposal of the disciple in attempting to move forward on the spiritual path. Students would do well to isolate, first of all, the broad general statements anent the zodiacal signs. We've been doing that in a way, even back in the early chapter, even the Aries chapter, he told it gave us 9 points that we were to consider as we studied each one of these signs. I think in our astrology classes we've done that in a somewhat systematic way, but maybe in these recordings it could have been a little more systematic. These are keynotes. There are said to be 9 methods of proceeding. So maybe the word keynotes is not correct. Maybe keynote. Maybe we'll try that. Here it is. And it's on page 109. So these are the 9 points that we are to be looking at. And he has somewhat followed this list as he has elucidated the signs. The keynote of the signs, these express the underlying effect upon the man as he progresses in one or two directions. 2, the nature of the cross upon which the man is crucified at any one time. It can be a cross in consciousness, or it can be the particular cross that his horoscope indicates as most prominent. 3, the influence of the planetary rulers, orthodox and esoteric. We've done that. 4, the rays, which, this is the statement, the rays which primarily express themselves through a particular sign. Well, we have gone over this extensively, though perhaps ultimate light has not come. The clue to which sign it may be is found in the orthodox planetary ruler, where the personality ray is concerned, and the esoteric planetary ruler, where the soul is concerned. I'll leave that one alone for the moment, because when we dealt with the Aries chapter, we explored the implications extensively. 5, the qualities of the sign of the man who has come forth in a particular sign. 6, that's, you know, character aspects, let us say. 6, the interplay between a sign and its polar opposite. We've been discussing that, and especially in the Cancer chapter, haven't we? 7, the planets which are exalted and detrimental, which fall in any particular sign, for study of these will indicate the 3 phases of the path, with its involutionary cycle of becoming increasingly involved in matter, I suppose the fall, or life upon the mutable cross, the interlude of readjustment or struggle for liberation, which leads to the mounting of the fixed cross. I suppose this may indicate the detriment, and the exaltation, the period of liberation, with the final mounting of the cardinal cross. A very different way of looking at falls, detriments, and exaltations. We fall into incarnation, the soul is detrimented as it struggles to establish itself upon the fixed cross, and then there is the exaltation of the rising above circumstances on the cardinal cross. 8, the significance of the key words for the modes of progress through the signs. And 9, the underlying theme of any specific zodiacal sign covered by the ideas of recreation, regeneration, reorientation, and renunciation. So these are the 9 points, and some of them are generalities concerning the signs, at least in the beginning, and then we get into more of the specifics as we go. So students would do well to isolate, first of all, the broad general statements anent the zodiacal signs and influence before they take up the intensive study of detailed and new informative suggestions which I may have given. So we need to see the big picture, I suppose, and lest our minds become confused, understand the broad indications of each sign and the general purpose and value of each sign. A grasp of the universals prior to a study of the particulars is ever a wise occult procedure. It seems he's waiting a little long till the Gemini chapter to tell us this, but he has repeated repeated this in many books, and probably earlier in the book as well. We need a long exposure to esoteric astrology before it really begins to seep into our consciousness and to become practical in the sense of usable. In each of the crosses of the heavens, there is one sign and influence which in any world cycle dominates the other three. If only we could clarify these blinds that show up as generic terms, like the term world cycle. So I think a search should be done on world cycle, and I think I will talk to those in charge of our Ageless Wisdom compilations and see if we have any such thing or whether it can be made. So, in any one of the crosses of the heavens, there is one sign and influence which in any world cycle dominates the other three. Of course, here maybe the world cycle doesn't mean solar system, because it seems that at different times of human evolution, each one of these signs would have to dominate. It would seem that at different points of human evolution, each of the four signs of a cross would have to be the dominating factor. Such dominating effects necessarily change when a world cycle changes. Before the present cycle, Gemini determines the paramount influence within the fourfold influence of the mutable cross. Now we have to compare that. When we talk about the cosmic decanates, we have two fixed signs and one mutable sign. The fixed signs are Taurus, the Buddha decanate, probably related to the third ray, Pisces, the Christ decanate, related to the second ray, Scorpio, the Hercules decanate, related to the first ray. And Pisces is considered to be, in that sense, the major sign of the second ray, in that large cosmic sense. At the present time, Virgo is the sign through which the majority of the second ray reaches humanity. Now, if we went here to page 490, or is it 590? Well, let's try 490 first. Yes. Today, the following points of the triangles of energy, or the following constellations in the triangles, are the controlling factors. Ray 2, Virgo. This constellation produces the increased activity of the Christ principle in the heart of humanity. So not Gemini in this respect, is it? Interestingly enough. And yet Gemini represents the head of the cosmic Christ. And as one of our astrologers, Nicholas Nilén, who is always way out there in terms of determining the newly appearing thoughts and impressions, he's progressive and thinks ahead. And Gemini is considered, in its relation to Orion, at least by him, to be the head of Orion. Because with Orion, we have no head. And Orion can be considered, from one perspective, the cosmic Christ, or a form of the cosmic Christ, and Gemini would be the head of the cosmic Christ. So Gemini, at this time, whatever that time is, see, when it talks here about a world cycle changing, it doesn't really sound like a change of solar system. And a world can be a planet. And it can be a round that we're talking about. But I think when we're dealing with the constellations, these are more solar systemic factors. So what is a world cycle? There are also solar systemic rounds. Rounds which are passing through each one of the planetary schemes. And maybe when they are completed, each one of them completed, a world cycle is changing. I don't think it's possible to penetrate this. The term world cycle is pretty well blinded. But anyway, it sounds like it could be occurring within our solar system. For the present cycle, Gemini determines the paramount influence. It certainly, in a way, rides above Orion, even spatially, graphically, in terms of the celestial map. The main objective, the main objective of these four energies is to produce that constant flux and periodical change in time and space, which will provide a field of adequate experience for the unfoldment of the Christ life and consciousness, hence mutability. And I was just reading on page 119 about the fluidity of both the sign Pisces and the sign Gemini. But of course, the increasing stability of both on the fixed cross and the change of Gemini into quite a stable sign, as the pillars indicate, no longer letting instability do its work. A field of adequate experience for the unfoldment of the Christ life through constant flux and periodic change, cyclic change in time and space. So we have what's called mutation of relation. And this gives new exposure to new energies. Whenever we are built into a particular relationship, we receive energies from the other factors that are also built into that configuration, and from the energy of the configuration as a whole. Well, that we would continue to receive, but when the relationship is reconfigured, then new influential factors affect us as they would not have in the earlier configuration. So the Christ life and consciousness needs this mutability. This is the case cosmically speaking, and also from the standpoint of a solar system, of a planet, of a human being. There is mutation of relation. There is a reconfiguration, and the signs of the zodiac are cosmic factors. So they are influencing the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, and probably each other in a relationship of mutation. They probably influence the cosmic logos in that way. The cosmic logos is the logos of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And the supercosmic logos has these cosmic logoi as chakras within it, and if the constellations of the zodiac are each a petal within the 12-petal major center in the head, the heart in the head center, of the one about whom naught may be said, then they have quite a strong influence over the other chakras, because they are, this is a major chakra in this great super cosmic being. So cosmically speaking, and from the standpoint of a solar system or planet, human being, etc., there is a mutation of relation, mutability, in the development of the different types of Christ consciousness and Christ life. The individual Christ, the planetary Christ, the solar systemic Christ, and various varieties of cosmic Christ. The field of development for the lower three kingdoms is dependent upon the status and energy distributing power of humanity as a whole, because let's just say humanity is the microcosm to these lower kingdoms. We might therefore recognize the following facts anent the mutable cross, of which Gemini is the paramount influence at this time. After all, we are in a second ray solar system. In a way, it's a love-wisdom solar system, so the duality is there of both love and wisdom, and we can look at Gemini expressing that duality. So we might therefore recognize the following facts anent the mutable cross. So this should be compared, let's just say, compared with page 119, where we had the discussion of the mutable cross. Gemini, this is the force which produces the changes needed for the evolution of the Christ consciousness, so we learn to relate to all that may be involved in any particular form or configuration. The evolution, this is the force which produces the changes needed for the evolution of the Christ consciousness at any particular point in time and space. It is always compatible to the requirement. Let's just say, lest we become too fixed or rigid in our mentality or consciousness. So there's so much ignorance and we know so little about the other types of human beings that are upon this planet and how they came to be as they are. When the relations change, we tend to learn more about them, more about the kingdoms, more about the layout, both gross and subtle, of our particular planet. We are moved about the globe and their influences, the influences of these other factors are brought to us via travel, trade in the early days, mass communication now. So exposure, let's just say changing exposure to many different kinds of energies, so that the Christ consciousness can learn to love them all. What was it said that propinquity or nearness produces love? You know, at first we may have no knowledge of someone or some group of people and we associate with them. We learn more of the good connected with them and the energy of love results from this new type of exposure. So the rearrangement of the configuration gives new types of exposure and gradually a growing sense of the unity which connects all parts of the configuration. Then Virgo. This is the nurturing force of substance itself, that which substands matter and perhaps matter itself, subject to 9 cyclic changes of the cosmic gestation period. And I suppose this means moving clockwise through 9 signs prior to birth, cosmic birth. It fosters and protects the embryonic Christ life, preparing for manifestation or a divine incarnation undertaken under Capricorn. So the form is sustained. The inner life nurtures the outer form. Every one of the signs of the zodiac in this ninefold cycle gives its own gift to the growing cosmic form, which at last is manifested. So we have to move, let's see, how do we have to move here? We have to move in a way counter. And then we have to move clockwise. So we have, let's see, if we have enough. Virgo, Leo, Cancer, Gemini, Taurus, Aries, Aries, Pisces, Aquarius, that's 8, and Capricorn, 9, if we move in the clockwise direction. So what is coming to birth from the point of view of the Great One about whom naught may be said? The supercosmic logos in whom these zodiacal constellations play a prominent part in the heart and the head center. I guess that's what we're talking about when it comes to cosmic gestation. We have to be aware of the levels at which he applies these. They can have a very microcosmic application, but also a cosmic application. So, let's see here. These are facts anent the mutable cross. Sagittarius is the energetic activity of the life force demonstrating at the sixth month. Now there we do not have a simple progression. There is no sequential progression here. But the sixth month will relate it to the sixth ray of Neptune. This relates to the sixth ray and to Neptune and to the animation chart, as Charles Jane used to call it, when the heart... Well, no, that's not correct. The sixth month is not the animation chart, no. That's more the fourth month, but it does relate to the sixth month of Neptune when, esoterically speaking, the three aspects of the form, nature, and the three aspects of the soul are integrated and functioning. But we are not ready for birth. It is this integration which sometimes makes the sixth month of physical human gestation so critical. We talk about the viable fetus. Of course, technology has intervened and made the unviable viable. You get some premature babies that are born very early and are somehow sustained through the intervening period. But anyway, this is the six-pointed star. Isn't it? Six-pointed star. Oh, I could do this. I just remembered the code. So this is the six-pointed star. The three aspects of the form, nature, and the three aspects of the soul are integrated and functioning. One of the first on the microcosmic level. And can we relate it, this criticality, to six-ray Mars? Can this criticality be related to sixth-ray Mars, which may produce perhaps a miscarriage. Perhaps once we reach the seventh month with the stabilizing idea of the number seven, there is less danger of miscarrying. There are the cosmic analogies as well. Anyway, there is a strong orientation. Sagittarius, the sixth ray, the six-pointed star, and Sagittarius, a major sign of integration, right? Speaking of the one-pointed alignment of all factors within the human energy system. So when we were studying Sagittarius, we see how much he accented the factor of personality integration. Pisces, then, this is the life expression and active appearance. Notice that he went in counterclockwise order, which is the normal order. This is the life expression and active appearance of the Christ consciousness in form. It is also the energetic appearance, symbolically speaking, of a world savior. And notice how he describes these beings. As energies, the energetic appearance of a world savior, and the appearance of the Christ consciousness in form, perhaps somewhat at the end of the mutable cross period, the beginning of the Christ consciousness in form is occurring. to be fully developed on the fixed cross, where the world Savior is finally produced at the end of the fourth initiation and beyond, and then somewhat on the cardinal cross, the truly great world Savior. The tendency towards world saviorship can be produced on the fixed cross. The tendencies and towards world saviorship can be produced by the fixed cross process. So we have these four facts among the mutable cross. They're taken in a rather general sense. In terms of consciousness, somewhat, the evolution of the Christ consciousness here, the gestation period leading to the birth of the Christ consciousness, whether microcosmic or macrocosmic, the fusion of soul and personality factors. This is leading to the integrated personality, perhaps integrated with the soul, but it's not yet a fully functioning world savior. So as we study these four, we see that he's dealing with a couple of levels simultaneously, one the larger and the other the smaller. This mutable cross is therefore peculiarly a Christian symbol, and significantly connected with the Christ life and with the unfoldment of a world savior. Discipleship in Sagittarius leads to world saviorship, right? In Pisces, page 333, Sagittarius the disciple becomes the savior in Pisces. Okay. The mutable cross is therefore a peculiarly Christian symbol, significantly connected with the Christ life. Now, the majority of rays upon the mutable cross, as we have said, are on the 2-4-6 line. Gemini ray 2, Virgo ray 2-6, Pisces ray 2-6, and Sagittarius gives us ray 4 on that line, and ray 6 on the 2-4-6 line, and only ray 5 deviates from the 2-4-6 line. Interesting. Of course, I'm not now talking about the planetary rulerships, I'm talking about the energies as they come through the constellation itself, and which can have organizing effects upon such great beings as a solar logos, and even upon a cosmic logos, which is within the range of the influence of these zodiacal constellations. So significantly connected with the Christ life and with the unfoldment of a world savior, finally in Pisces, and is particularly potent during the anti-clockwise turning of the great wheel, on which the world savior can emerge. Pisces, in that sense, a climactic sign, giving the synthetic power of the world savior who deeply understands the human psyche, and for that reason can be the teacher, the therapist, the divine psychologist, the wise one, the true savior. Now, as a matter of fact, to find out the three things that a world savior can be, we go to Dina 2 and page 518. Should have memorized this, of course. Those on the second ray tread one or other of the various paths, primarily that of the world savior. So the three factors are the divine psychologist, world teacher, and world savior all at once. All at once. Teacher, psychologist, and savior. And some on the second ray emphasized one of these or the other, but the Christ emphasized all three. Seems he's such a synthetic being. He seems, under Pisces, to be able to take from all the signs. He seems such a magnetic center that the Buddha has given him his three triadal vestures for use when becoming more a monad than a being manifesting in the five lower worlds. Okay, this fact of it being a peculiarly Christian symbol, even though perhaps the symbol of the mutable cross, is it particularly a cross? I guess we could look at that. This fact will emerge more clearly when astrologers are able to determine accurately the point of development and the spiritual status of the subject whose horoscope is under consideration. A constantly repeated requirement, which, though simple, seems not simple to perform in an accurate manner. There are many estimations of the status of others, but who is to say they are correct, because there's so little of the soul development which is actually visible to us. Not everything can be seen through the personality, as DK did emphasize when talking about, you know, how little had to be removed from the disciples he took into his group in general for them to be truly liberated, regardless of the apparent faults that they had. The formless nature of the influences of Gemini is strikingly borne out if the significance of Masonry is studied. In Masonry, we do have the two pillars, the J and B, as they're called, and that is the symbol of entering through the pairs of opposites to find the hidden light and discover that which is neither of the pairs of opposites. So in a way, one is passing through the pillars of wisdom. This worldwide institution was, as I have earlier told you, organized under the influence and impulse of this sign. But long, long ago, maybe even in Lemurian times. And we ask, under a Platonic year, ruled by Gemini, or an ordinary precessional cycle of approximately 2160 years. Precessional. Let's see if we can see the spelling on that one. Maybe not. Processional, but not precessional. And is governed by it, Masonry is governed by it in a most peculiar manner. Maybe some of those most associated with the Reformation of Masonry have a powerful Gemini in their chart. Alice Bailey was one such, and Keith Bailey another. And his group, reformulating the modern Masonry more along the lines of the ancient intentions. The format or exoteric symbolism of Masonry has frequently been changed during the millennia of years in which it has been active. It is definitely a form which has been active during Egyptian times, and when we talk about Egyptian times, we can be talking about not just a few thousand years, but even 60 or 70,000 years, perhaps more. Its present Jewish coloring is relatively modern. and not necessarily enduring. The word necessarily is a qualifier. It is necessary, I think, to be rid of the predominantly Jewish coloring of masonry and make it more universal. But will this necessarily happen? Well, according to the way it seems to be going now, it is happening. But we cannot take a vision acquired at the foreground and know for sure. It may take a century or two to see what the trend really is. Okay. We are reaching that point. Why don't I write here, say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology 100 with C and page 346, and beginning of Esoteric Astrology 100D, page 346, we are in the middle of the Gemini chapter. All right, we are there.